This is Bronwyn Schwagert, licensed therapist and author at the Angry at the Right Things podcast. Instead of controlling our anger, we'll be looking at what causes it in the first place so we can rectify what's dysfunctional in our lives and in the world. Here we go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bronwyn and Katie's Angry at the Right Things first video session ever.
Oh, boy.
The video recording studio. I want to just big shout out to Katie here because I kind of had to guilt trip her into doing a video recording with me.
It's true. Yes, microphone. Make out with the microphone.
And look, make out with the microphone and look at the folks.
Yes, and look at the camera.
The folks want to see your beautiful face. Mm-hmm. So this is torturing her right now, but she's only going to have to endure for like another second. And she won't be able to see herself. But anyway, this is us, guys. Welcome to Angry at the Right Things video. Today, we are going to be talking about borderline personality disorder.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa. So I have a bunch of notes and I'm just excited to share all of this. What I really want to start out by saying is that borderline personality disorder is everywhere.
Right. Like I recall maybe a year or two ago, you and me talking about borderline personality disorder and we were talking about it like it's pretty rare, right? I think at the time we both were under the understanding that it was not something you run into very often, but you've since learned so much to the contrary of that.
Yeah. And I think even when I was in graduate school and we were trained on the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for all of like the disorders, we learned about narcissism, we learned about borderline personality disorder. And of course, we're all like, oh, that's so fascinating. And we all really thought they were rare personality disorders. And we were kind of taught that they were. And guess what, guys? They are way, 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 way too common, like really common. And in fact, I am not going to distinguish between those two. I actually think that all narcissists most likely are also borderline personality disorder people and vice versa. I think we're making a false dichotomy. I think they really go hand in hand.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So we can talk about, we're just going to talk today about borderline personality disorder. But if you are listening, please know we're also talking about narcissism. They're one and the same. We're going to just not distinguish between them today. But I will say there is a spectrum. So people are on a spectrum. So there's like what you can call a malignant borderline personality disorder person versus...
And malignant would be like the most extreme version of borderline.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. So let's go ahead and start. But I do want to say these are both. So borderline personality disorder as well as narcissism are considered attachment disorders. So that means that they're personality disorders, which means that the diagnostic outlook is bleak. In other words, people with personality disorders are not good candidates for breakthrough in therapy. This is because it is so pervasive because it is the very basic foundation of trust versus mistrust in the first several years of life never really takes hold. So in infancy, basically, people who are borderline never get to the place of trust. And if you don't have that foundation to believe implicitly that humans are trustworthy, you can't really undo that. It's really, really, really unlikely to ever be undone. Also, borderline personality disorders, I'll just call them BPDs.
Okay.
They don't have insight. So they have no insight that something might be very wrong with them.
Oh, so they don't see it in themselves.
Right. Okay. So that makes them very hard to treat. Right. They're very, that which makes them also very different from people who have like a mood disorder. So mood disorder would be like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder. Those are all mood disorders. Those people know something is wrong with them and they're motivated to do the work to get better. You're not going to have that with someone who's BPD. So if you combine those two things, there's no insight that there's anything wrong with them, plus that they don't trust people, including therapists, how likely do you think they're actually going to get help?
Right. Probably, and especially therapists.
Especially therapists. Mm-hmm. And if they do go to therapy, do you think they're going to be their real selves?
No.
Okay. So all of that makes it really hard to help someone who is BPD. I believe a lot of them self-diagnose that they have ADD or anxiety. I believe a lot of people with addictions are actually BPD, which is really unfortunate because people who are in addiction recovery, recovery really focuses only on getting sober.
Right.
It doesn't help people who are sick even when they're sober. When they finally get clean, they're still sick, right?
Right. Like, why did they become an addict to begin with?
Right. Why did they need to dissociate by using substances to begin with?
Okay.
Yeah. And I think a lot of them get misdiagnosed as well with things like depression, anxiety, and especially bipolar disorder, which is not BPD, but I think a lot, there's a lot of confusion. Bipolar disorder just means someone has manic episodes from time to time. And that just means they are hyper energetic at times. And then they also have depression at times. That's as simple as it is. It's a mood disorder. It's not like a pervasive personality disorder. It's not really a big deal, honestly. I've treated a lot of people with bipolar. I don't think it's a big deal.
Interesting.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a big deal. So, I'm kind of now at the stage as a therapist where I'm able to diagnose BPD in my client's parents, because obviously the parents are in the therapy sessions with us, but I can just hear a few things and go ding, 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 ding. I'm checking all my boxes that there is a BPD parent here. Mm. And I'm able to do that very quickly. I like to say I can now spot BPD from a mile away. And here's the thing, guys, in retrospect, I now see it clearly in both my parents.
Wow.
The patterns, once you know what to look for, are pretty consistent. And once you see the patterns, you have the power to predict what to expect in the future, which gives you strategic insight for what to expect and how to respond with people who have BPD. So with my brand new clients, I'll share some of what I know about patterns of BPD with them, you know, and they'll say to me, oh my God, it's like you're living in my house. How do you know that my parents growing up did that and do this kind of stuff today? And I'm like, well, I kind of did live in your house because I had two parents with BPD. And, you know, again, your family home, unfortunately, is very representative of pretty much a lot of people's family homes. Mm. So I now hypothesize that every family has at least one person who's on the BPD spectrum.
Wow. That's a lot.
It's a lot. And again, that sounds really dramatic. But if you think of what BPD is, it's just an attachment disorder, which means in infancy, that child did not have consistent attunement by the parent. They did not have sufficient attunement by a parent. And if you think that's what creates this, well, no duh, you're going to see it all over, right? Because that unfortunately happens all the time.
That makes sense.
Okay. So here's what some of the stuff I like to share with my clients, and I want to share it with you guys today. I think the first thing to know about BPD, and if you want to start noticing the patterns in people, is that they cannot tolerate anything that is perceived to be rejecting.
Okay.
Like a hint, a whiff of rejection. They cannot tolerate that. So this is especially seen if it's a parent. You can see this when their child enters like the preteen years, like 10 or 11, because now that child is starting to want to associate more with their peers and less with the parent. And let's say it's a mother, it could be a father, but let's say it's a mother in this case, that mother's going to feel rejected by her 10-year-old or abandoned. And those things are hand in hand. Rejection and abandonment, they're one and the same. Feeling rejected is the same as feeling abandoned. So they will reject or abandon back. That's how they respond.
Okay.
So this could entail silent treatment. It could entail withholding of all affection suddenly. It could manifest as overt rage and like character attacks on their child. One client recently shared that when she was in that age and she started, she had like a boyfriend that she kissed, her mom called her a whore.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So this mom felt abandoned by the mere fact that the daughter had someone else in her life, which they're going to start to do around the early teens, right? Or the preteens, early teens. And so they will reject or abandon back. And this is the shaming that this client shared with me is very emblematic of BPDs and how they attack when they are jealous of their daughter. It could be of their daughter's friend. It could be of their daughter's love interest. It could be anyone who they feel like is threatening. Yeah. So I know all our listeners don't know any of this. They've never experienced it themselves firsthand. No, I'm kidding, because everyone has. Okay. So many BPD parents feel rejected when the child simply has their own independent thoughts, feelings, or ideologies.
Okay.
So I had a former friend who was very enmeshed in her young teen daughter, so enmeshed that she planned these little trips for just the two of them. And she, the mom, was so excited about these little trips, like way too excited for a mom. Whenever I disagreed with this former friend, she would tell me she had argument fatigue. Apparently, she didn't get that argument fatigue when she disagreed with me. But when I disagreed with her, she had argument fatigue.
Right.
So when she was raising her little best friend / daughter, I can only imagine how this poor child wouldn't ever and isn't ever able to separate from her mother with her own unique thoughts or beliefs. Those are too threatening for the BPD mother.
Right.
And guys, this is really interesting what I'm about to say. I believe this BPD behavior is often masked by religion in many families. If the young person is questioning their faith, they see the parent clamp down full force in the name of religion or salvation or God, but it's really about the parent feeling rejected and abandoned, that the child is having their own independent and separate thoughts and ideologies.
That is so interesting.
So the BPD parent can't tolerate that, plain and simple. Another time this shows up is when the child is no longer an infant. So, you know, as a child, we wouldn't recall this. But if we're watching it, maybe we can recall this happening to a sibling when we were an older sibling or whatnot. But when the child is no longer an infant who depends upon the parent, but enters the independent phase of what we call the terrible twos. So most BPD parents love the early infancy stage because they feel needed. They feel wanted by their baby. But when this phase ends, the push for independence begins, the parent will actively reject or can actually actively reject their toddler by withholding affection and nurture, showing anger, or both. So what you have to understand is the parent is also a toddler on the inside. That parent is an emotional toddler. And so it's actually like witnessing two toddlers interacting.
Wow.
But unfortunately, the adult toddler always wins. And what this teaches the actual chronological toddler is a host of skewed implicit beliefs, such as when I show anger, that equals abandonment by my primary attachment figure, or my anger is evil and my job is therefore to placate the anger of others. And thus the imprint of codependency is formed.
I was just going to say that part you just said, it sounds so familiar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you guys didn't hear the codependency episode, that's a couple episodes back. Please listen to that. We go into detail all about codependency. So many BPD parents feel the baby hates them when the baby cries excessively, which could be any crying that continues in spite of the parent's attempt to comfort the child. So they take it personally. And they will, unfortunately, reject the baby back. I had a friend who told me how her BPD mother admitted to her when she became a mother. So now the BPD mother is a grandmother. And she admits to my friend how when she cried as a newborn, the mom would go to the older sister who was three and hug her instead of hugging her infant who was crying. And her mom said, I don't know why I used to do this. I don't know. But you know what? I know why she did this, because the mother was using her three-year-old daughter as a source of comfort for the pain of feeling rejected or hated by her infant who she felt rejected by with the crying.
That's really sad.
Yeah. All that infant knows is what she feels, which is unwanted and unloved consistently, which creates the template for herself to form BPD. So BPD runs in families. No, it is not in the DNA. It is not genetic. But yes, it does run in families, which makes it look genetic. But that's a mask, right? Of course it runs in families, because the mother who has BPD is now abandoning her baby.
Right. It's learned.
It is totally nurture. Mm-hmm. It's not nature. It is not nature. So there's a great book. I've mentioned this before in the podcast. Called Understanding the Borderline Mother, which was really helpful for me. The author, Christine Lawson, she creates four different varieties or categories of BPD mothers, which again would apply to all people. She identifies four different ones. There's the waif, the hermit, the queen, and the witch. And there is some overlap with all four of those, but I want to expand on some of these types. And I also want to clarify, these are not verbatim what I'm quoting from her book. I'm actually adding my own thoughts and reflections onto Christine Lawson's. So let's start with the waif. The waif wants to depend on others, such as their children. The act of dependence is how they receive nurture or love. These are the parents who don't want to nurture themselves, such as working to provide an income for themselves if they can get away with it. They don't want to drive themselves if they don't have to. They don't want to feed themselves or cook for themselves or even learn the local language should they not be a first language, English language, first language person. They want to depend on their children or their spouse or others to do all these things for them, like drive them, cook for them, provide financially for them, translate for them. And what they're doing is they're outsourcing their nurture needs to others and thereby feeling loved through those actions. In their sick minds, they feel loved. Some of these parents will do these things for themselves, but they'll be demonstratively resentful about it. For example, a mother might cook, but she will be very resentful the whole time and begrudging. She might complain or just talk about how resentful she is that she's doing all the cooking, blah, 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 the whole time. She might be very resentful about everything she does for her kids and her spouse. She's just always verbalizing and demonstrating how resentful she is for nurturing anyone, basically, including spending money sometimes. Not always, but it, yeah. So this makes the child feel guilty and like a burden, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Or this type of parent will willingly cook and clean maybe for the children, but with a tacit implication that the child owes her. The BPD parent ascribes to a transactional type of relationship, which the child is now indebted to her for whatever parenting or nurture she has done. She doesn't understand that having kids is not a transactional type of relationship. I had a friend who was a waif, and we'll call her Mary.
Okay.
And she chose not to have a car and not to drive. She expected me and everyone else to drive her. And it made her feel loved and nurtured, although she would never admit this. She wanted to get married in order to be 100% taken care of, just like her mother was by her father. So this is an extreme example, but in general, we should know that waifs are parasitic in nature. They will only give as much as necessary in order to get their needs met. Okay, so let's go on to the hermit. The hermit trusts no one, and she will make this very clear to her children in an attempt to isolate them and keep them always at home with her. She's extremely fear-based to the point that if her adult daughter were to say, "Hey, mom, I just got a promotion at work," she would respond with something like, but how are you going to do this? Plus still cook and still blah, 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 and do this and read dinner, read books to your kids every night. That would be her response. It would be very fearful. Or if an adult daughter says, "Hey, I'm going to go, I got a free trip, work trip to England. I finally get to go to England. Can you believe it?" The BPD hermit mom might say something like, "Oh my God, there's terrorists there." Okay, that would be her response. The hermit wants to stay in her house and be miserable, and she wants her children to stay in the house and be miserable with her. The hermit's worst nightmare is if her adult child has her own life, or even her young child has her own life and seems happy. The parent may go out of her way to sabotage the child's success or happiness, such as creating some kind of a crisis suddenly when their adult child goes to London. The mom might find that a really good time to have her own diabetic coma.
Right.
Where she just suddenly forgets, air quotes, to take her insulin.
Right.
Okay. Hermits often hoard money and have a scarcity mentality, like they are living in the Great Depression. Where was I here? They often hoard things, and it's like their home is a fortress fortified by their belongings. So the hoarding is part of their safety, kind of like what's reclusing themselves from the world.
Right.
What they want to hoard most of all is their children, and they will go to great lengths to do so. Anyone who the hermit has to share the child with is threatening. So I have a friend with a hermit mother who shared with me recently that when she was 17 and doing really well and embarking upon her life of independence and success, her mother once kind of gave herself away by saying, "You're 17 and you have your whole life in front of you, and mine is half over." Instead of rejoicing and celebrating, her 17-year-old daughter is like launching out into the world, and the world is her oyster. This mother, showing her true colors in this lament, she is showing that she will not rejoice or celebrate her daughter, but she rather feels in competition and therefore threatened by her daughter's happiness. When the daughter moved away out of state, most of their phone conversations were monopolized by the mother, lamenting now about how her favored sibling, the favored sibling, my friend's brother, won't call her or visit her enough. So again, instead of showing interest and pride in my friend, her daughter, this mother only valued the one dimension of her daughter, the part of the daughter who attunes to her, who listens to her and validates her and empathizes. She showed no concern for the other two dimensions of her daughter. Okay, so the next type is the queen. So the queen is very obvious that she needs attention all the time, and she will do anything to get it and keep it. Negative attention is attention, guys, and that means fighting is one of their ways to get and keep attention and make them feel powerful. Fighting makes a lot of borderline queens feel powerful. And again, this goes for men as well as women. So if you have someone in your life who is fighting with you a lot, you should know that you're actually giving them the attention and the attunement in a sick way that they are actually wanting from you. So there's nothing better to a lot of queen borderline personality disorder people than a good fight. The queen is dramatic and can be fun and often is the life of the party. And she can also attune to people very well. Initially, the newcomer feels warm, feels seen, feels even idealized by a borderline queen. And queens can be very funny. But it doesn't last long. And often the welcome newcomer starts to feel like an audience member more than a peer. And the humor can go dark and become very cruel in an instant.
Okay, so the queen is... She starts off as like a charmer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
She's the most likely to be a charmer.
Yes. Yeah. I know this type. Okay.
Are you wanting to share any
reflections? No, not yet. I just recognize this personality type.
I think this type is very recognizable. I believe a lot of Hollywood stars would be the queen, male and female.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them go into theater.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, but for the child, a queen parent can be very confusing, and the child will often feel a great deal of shame or rejection herself, because when the queen is alone with her child, away from her audience, she's often silent and withdrawn, and the minute another person is present, she's back on stage. And so the child internalizes the lack of attention as her own fault, like there's something wrong with her. That mom or dad doesn't light up for her, but actually the opposite. And so the child will believe at an implicit level that she's flawed and she's shameful and she's lacking. If the queen doesn't get enough attention, she will present as depressed. And because we need to understand with a queen, attention is what defends against her true feelings of worthlessness and emptiness. But the child only sees the worthlessness and emptiness when she's with her alone. Queens are often obsessed with external experiences, even more, and appearances more than other BPDs. And they will extend this to the child. They'll be very preoccupied with the child's weight, especially, and their looks. Now, what we should know is all BPDs view children as merely an extension of themselves, and they cannot tolerate that the child might shame them or bring them shame in any way. So if you are an overweight child of a BPD, especially a queen, you're going to feel especially shameful about your weight. Many queens take up acting or some kind of public performance related hobby or career aspiration, and they also want this for their children. Okay, and the last category is the witch. the witch is dangerous and cruel with her words and sometimes with her physical actions. The book that came to my mind, when I read the Understanding the Borderline Mother book is the book called A Boy Called It. Did you ever read A Boy Called It?
I didn't, but I know of it.
Okay. Yeah. So A Boy Called It, the mother, it's so obvious now in retrospect, the mother is a BPD witch. She singles out one of her sons, the one who wrote the book as an adult, as her evil child. And she deprives him of food. She beats him and she even tries to kill him over and over. So BPD parents of all varieties often have an all good child and an all bad child. This is very common. The all good ones grow up feeling tremendous guilt, and that pervades all their relationships, in which they'll feel guilty instead of angry when someone wrongs them. They often become very codependent and often identify as caretakers and empathic. They're the ones who attune to the BPD parent.
Ah. Okay.
So basically, I personally believe that children of BPD parents will often become either codependent because they attune to the parent and so they're all good, or they will become BPD themselves because they're all bad in the parent's eyes. So Christine Lawson also writes that within most BPD mothers, the witch variety can show up at any time in what she terms the turn. So the turn happens no matter if the child's all good or all bad, but all of a sudden the child feels like she's always walking on eggshells because she knows that the turn could happen at any minute. And that's when the mother releases a cruel and provocative quip filled with venom intended to maim and often humiliate the child, or when she is suddenly violent, that could be the turn as well. And this turn can enrage the child, but often the child doesn't feel safe to show her rage. And so it goes inside where it's even more dangerous. I think the most important takeaway about BPDs is that they can be very confusing because as repulsive as their behavior is, as I've already summarized, they can also be amazing when they attune to others. They can attune like nobody's business. BPDs can make a person feel so loved, so seen, so idealized, and so needed when they want to, which is when they need to.
So like they're like the very best manipulators.
They are the best. They can be.
Like the sneakiest.
They can be so good. So I want to give a little reflective story about this. So I often wonder why I stayed friends with Mary. Mm-hmm. I'll call her Mary. The now obviously BPD friend that I had for so long. So I didn't know she was BPD at the time, but I did see a lot of very disconcerting behaviors. And looking back, I realized what kept me in our relationship was how good it felt to be needed by her. And at times, idealized. It's not obvious in the moment, but in retrospect, I see that. So I'll give you examples. I recall when she would ask my opinion or call me or need to talk through things. And when I listened and paraphrased and gave her any kind of insight, I felt like Albert Einstein. Mary made me feel like a freaking genius when I gave my two cents. It wasn't even necessarily what she actually said. It was more of a look on her face. So I'm going to try to recreate it. So I would be like, well, Mary, maybe blah, 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 blah. And she would nod and her eyebrows would knit together with a look of absolute marvel on her face. Like, yes. Yeah. And then she'd kind of shake her head like, stunned by my genius.
Right.
And, or so I thought. And her mouth would even be open like, yeah. And, yeah, so she just made me feel so like such a rock star, and she idealized me. And I now realize that's what drew me in and kept me in that friendship for so long, even though I saw all these disconcerting behaviors.
Makes sense.
It can be addictive. It can be addictive. And when you don't feel like you have the support you need from other friends, mm-hmm. the warmth that a BPD can give you,
right?
You just can't let it go.
And they're shining that light on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another takeaway that can be applied for all BPDs, again, they cannot handle a hint of perceived or even real rejection. But here's what they will do. They will never admit they feel rejected. They won't admit it. It could be perceived by them by something as simple as like you asking an honest question. Maybe you say, you know, Mary, I'm just confused because you told me that before and now you're saying this. So a BPD could read that as you questioning her and you're rejecting her. You're not trusting her. And she will read that as you're accusing her of lying. Mm-hmm. She can't just read it as, oh, yeah, I did actually say that. And now I'm saying this. She can't do that. She will be like, whether she says it or not, she will think you're accusing her of lying. Because remember, if you don't trust people, if you don't have that foundation where you can trust other people, when you hear something with a hint of distrust from them, you're going to take that as they're accusing you of lying. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
It could be when they believe you're insinuating that they might be wrong about something. Mm-hmm. And it can be as a mere insinuation that they might be wrong. You might be saying, oh, no, that's not $5.99. It's actually $10.99. With a BPD, that could be it. That could be the only thing that does it. Turns you into all bad in their eyes.
Wow.
So they go from all good to all bad. They idealize people and then they go to devaluing people very, very quickly. It could also be when you develop another friendship or even a hobby that you don't share with your BPD person. All of those things could be triggers for them rejecting you or seeing you as all bad. So when BPDs experience perceived rejection, they reject and or abandon back. And this can manifest in many different ways, but what you can be sure of is it will happen. So I want to say this because I know a lot of my clients, when I talk about BPD, they'll say, do I have BPD? And you know what I'll say is actually the fact that you're actually willing to look into that you might have BPD tells me that you don't have it. So if any of you guys are relating to feeling pain from real or perceived rejection, please know that what matters most is that you are willing to admit that rejection hurts, even perceived rejection hurts. And you know what? It does hurt. It hurts all humans. All humans feel pain upon feeling rejection. That is normal and natural. That doesn't make anyone BPD. But what matters is that we can identify the feeling and engage in insight and self-awareness to admit that we feel hurt. And that makes those of us who admit it, who are willing to admit it, not BPD. Because we can realize that's an us problem in the moment, and we're not outsourcing that to everyone else. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're wondering if you are BPD, that's the ultimate litmus test, is if you're willing. So if Katie says, you know, Bronwyn, I have this new friend and I'm spending all this time with her. And if I can admit and say, you know, Katie, that I'm happy for you, but I'm going to be honest, like, I'm kind of jealous. If I can admit that, you guys, I'm just human. that does not make me borderline personality disorder. The borderline personality disorder people, who those are the ones who can and will not admit the hurt. It's a lack of insight. So when people ask me what they can, if they can live with a BPD person in their lives, my prognosis is grim for the same reason. It's exactly because a BPD cannot and will not admit their own hurt and their own hypersensitivity to rejection or perceived rejection is why I don't have hope for sustained relationships. Until someone is willing to break out of their denial, and remember, denial is a type of self-deceit or a self-lie, they cannot change. They cannot change their behavior, and that will ultimately hurt the people around them over and over and over. So that's all I wrote. Is there anything you want to share, reflect on? Like what shocked you or surprised you maybe the most?
I think I'm just kind of flipping through people I've known in my life and just seeing, I'm seeing that there may have been people that had BPD that I never would have thought about before.
Do you want to out them right now? I'm just kidding.
No, yeah, no, no. Just, yeah, just, I think I might have thought of it as like personality quirks or people that might have been abused or I don't know, just in my mind, but I didn't see, I'm just seeing it in more places than I would have before. Like, it's like, okay, like you were saying, it's a lot more common than
so common than
I ever knew.
Yeah. Okay. So you're you feel like, oh, I'm actually very familiar with this, even though.
Yes, okay. I am more familiar with this than I even knew yesterday. Like, I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. Not even necessarily like people I'm related to, but just people I have known in my life. Okay. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to think on this for a while. But yeah.
My daughter Edie was telling me she had a former friend who I think had BPD, and she told me how they used to cuddle and watch movies together in high school. And then Edie, like, she kind of got tired of cuddling and she moved over to the other side of the couch. And I'm like, oh, that's probably when her friend saw her as all bad and started like passive aggressively rejecting her, and why, and ultimately led to the end of their friendship. But I bet it could be just as simple as me, like, oh, Katie, oh, I'm gonna sit over here.
Yeah,
if Katie's BPD, she just felt rejected by me, but and I'm gonna go to a place of all bad in her mind,
right?
And she's gonna hurt me back, she's gonna reject me back. It can be in a number of ways.
No, and yeah, and I have a relative that I've always thought of as being bipolar, and I don't know what their actual diagnosis is, but hearing all this today is making me wonder if BPD is actually maybe
I think I know who this is.
More appropriate diagnosis. I don't know, but it's got me thinking about it.
Yeah. So like I said, a lot of people are diagnosed bipolar and they might also have bipolar, but I think a lot of them actually have BPD underlying that.
I think so.
I don't think that's uncommon.
Okay. That makes sense.
But I think as a society, we confuse bipolar with BPD because they have the diagnosis of bipolar and we see them acting BPD. And I think that conflates those two.
It does.
For the rest of us, actually.
It does. Yes.
I think that's common. Okay. Well, we talked a lot and this is, you know, we'll talk more next time, but it's a lot to take in, but guys, we can't allow ourselves to be used and manipulated. It's going to make us depressed and anxious. It really, really will. And I have to say my father, who I never thought ever would have a BPD diagnosis, and now I am positive he has BPD. You know, my boundaries with him now have kind of saved my mental health.
Yeah.
So, guys, we got to protect our own mental health, and we cannot allow people to hurt us when they refuse to have insight and awareness. And that's not something to feel guilty about.
No.
We're only responsible for our own feelings. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today. And we'll talk to you guys next time with Angry at the Right Things.